Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
We do have a less number of transits and a little bit less tonnage due to the reduction on transits. This is the first time we ever had to reduce transits because we had the second driest year in the history of the Panama Canal.
Ilya Espina de Marota is deputy administrator of the Panama Canal.
I want to say that the driest year was in 1997, when the Panama Canal was not expanded yet. Even in 1997, we actually have to give draft restrictions to the Panamax locks. So as you can imagine, in 2023, things become a little bit more difficult. So you can see here the tonnage and the number of transits and how 2023 is being impacted compared to our fiscal years of 2022, 2024. Forecasted at 23.
This is Agriculture Today.
I think it's going to be production numbers.
Greg McBride, Director of Brokerage with Allendale.
So we saw this this past year, and this is going to be something that we need to be watching. And I think the biggest thing at this point is, do these production numbers continue to look a little bit lower? We're looking at say the hog side of things with maybe some breeding stock liquidation off this last hogs and pigs report. That tends to give us some lower numbers eventually, but it's going to take some time. The same thing can be said about this cattle market. Such a long-term uptrend for most of this year up until about September, and then all of a sudden the market takes a nosedive. And a lot of it becomes when we start to look at these cattle on feed numbers. And 3 months in a row now, we've seen these cattle on feed numbers show more cattle than what we were expecting. And that's what's driving this lower. And then again, you also see the meats. We're seeing good exports to start 2024, but your boxed beef numbers have been getting beat up. Your pork numbers, your wholesale pork numbers have been getting beat up. So the meat side of things is not holding up nearly as well as it should be for markets that, especially in the cattle market, that has held such a good uptrend for the better part of 9 to 10 months. So I think as we look out to 2024, we're going to watch these production numbers. Can we continue to see these minor liquidations or these liquidated numbers to help prop us up a little bit? I think we can, but we also need to get that other side of it, the other side of the ledger, which is the meat side of things, and we need to continue to see that go in a better direction. One of the concerns that you have overall in this going into 2024 is we're going into an election year. That tends to be a little bit rough on the economy, sometimes the stock market that takes a little bit of a dip as we start an election year. If the money value that is, you know, that people are working with is not necessarily there, we might see a scramble for lower cost cuts of meat, whether that's some of the pork side of things or the chicken side of things. And we'll maybe migrate away from the beef side of things, which has been a little bit more expensive for the last couple of years.
What's ahead for 2024?
When it comes to the grains overall, Brazil is going into that very big time of the year as far as their main production phase for soybeans. They've already seen some issues. They started out very hot, very dry. So if we see some hiccups over the first couple of weeks of January, we could see some of these production numbers fade a little bit. Right now, we're talking about 160-ish million tons of production down there. I've seen numbers going down as low as 151 to 153. So if we do cut another, say, 10 million tons off of that, that's a pretty substantial cut. That's going to start to turn that bean market a little bit bullish. It also gives you a little bit of concern about the timing of the planting of that safrinha crop down in Brazil. That's their second crop corn. That's 75% of their overall production. So you've got to be very careful that if they were delayed on planting their soybeans, that could push or could make them not plant some of those safrinha acres down there as well. So over the first couple of weeks to first couple of months of the year, we're going to really start to get a better idea of what things look like in South America, and that can set the tone for everything here in the United States as far as potential for export demand.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We obviously have a Farm Bill extension until September 30th of 2024.
Allison Rivera is with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association in Washington, D.C. on the Farm Bill extension.
It's always difficult to get bigger pieces of legislation across the finish line as we enter an election year, which we will be entering in 2024. There are some issues that Republicans and Democrats are still, having some difference of opinions on within the Farm Bill. And just a reminder to your members that the Farm Bill does include SNAP, and that will probably be around 85% of this Farm Bill. A lot of the sticking points do fall under that bucket of the overall Farm Bill. And so we're continuing to kind of hear some of that, some of those rumblings and difference of opinions there. But as we move forward, you know, what I do want your listeners to know is that NCBA is going to continue to push for, you know, the support and strengthening of risk management programs like we just discussed, and for those disaster programs that are so vital for our cattle producers, especially as you and I are speaking and we're moving it right into the dead of winter. You know, we're going to continue to push for those programs and push to get a new Farm Bill done before this extension ends September 30th of 2024. So that's still our main goal. I think that's been our goal since the beginning. And I think there's a lot of very intelligent members of Congress that know that that's what they have to do, and specifically, you know, leadership. There are, just as a reminder to your listeners, there are plenty of Democrats in Congress. You know, they're obviously not members of the Freedom Caucus that do want to support a Farm Bill and do support agriculture and do support cattle producers. And NCBA works directly with those members. If you are supportive of cattle producers and the work that they're out there doing, then we're going to find a way to work with you. And so I think that also goes back to a statement I made a few minutes ago about the Farm Bill, including SNAP dollars, right? You have a lot of Democrats in Congress that want to see those SNAP dollars move forward and want to see a Farm Bill pass because of that portion of it. So, yes, it's going to take bipartisan effort. It's going to take some compromises to get it done. But if we lose some of those Republican votes that you mentioned, I certainly believe we can pick them up on the Dem side.
What's the latest on ELDs?
The electronic logging device exemption for livestock haulers does reside in language for funding the government, right? And so as we've seen these short-term funding bills, as again you referenced, Congress is a little bit nutty right now, we sit in this ELD delay until January 19th. At that point, Congress will need to do something else with that bill language. Again, it's become an item that I think the language has existed both in the House and Senate bills for the last couple of years, and it should remain in place. But I always just like to give haulers and producers a sense of what that timeline looks like. So you'll be hearing from us again before that January 19th deadline. But for now, that exemption is in place until the 19th. And again, just for your listeners, Tony, we're doing a lot at NCBA in the transportation space. There's a lot of stuff out there, from speed limiters to truck weights. And just so your listeners know, we are keeping the pedal to the metal and going to push back on bad transportation regs that negatively affect our haulers, and continuing to try to push forward with things like increased truck weights.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Anaplasmosis is a common cattle disease we see, and really many producers are going to be familiar with the clinical signs.
Oklahoma State Extension Beef Cattle Specialist Roslyn Biggs.
It's caused by a rickettsial bacteria that invades the red blood cells of the cow. That leads to anemia, jaundice, weakness, inappetence. We can also see abortions related to these infections, as well as retained placentas, and even in severe cases, death. The challenge with this disease is once these cows are infected, they're infected for life and remain carriers. They serve as sources of infection for those that have not been exposed yet. We do have antimicrobial treatments, antibiotics, that can be prescribed by a veterinarian to address the initial infection. However, they will not eliminate the carrier status. We don't have any approved medications here in the United States, currently available to eliminate the carrier status. So it becomes important for producers to be aware of the disease. If we are going to, if we see signs that could be consistent with anaplasmosis and we want to either sample those animals, which testing is done on a blood test, and or treat those animals, we need to be cautious when we're handling them. Because remember, they are anemic, they can be weak, and just the stress of handling can tip them over into really a serious situation. Once we go to diagnosis, OSU researchers continue to work on this disease, even working on a shoot side test that they're working to become commercially available. If a producer is not sure that they have anaplasmosis in their herd, it's important to work with their veterinarian to develop a plan of addressing this potential disease. We want to make sure new introductions are tested prior to arrival in case they have not been exposed previously. We also want to take other biosecurity measures like handling animals carefully, making sure we're not introducing those new introductions right off. We want to make sure we're not reusing equipment such as needles from animal to animal, which can also spread the disease. It's transmitted primarily by ticks, but we can also see transmission with biting flies. And again, we as humans can mechanically transmit the disease through common equipment. We routinely see bovine anaplasmosis in Oklahoma and this region. However, in other parts of the United States, they're beginning to see a similar infection caused by Tularia. Tularia causes similar signs and is coordinated with a relatively new tick we're seeing in the U.S., the Asian longhorn tick. So if you're suspecting anaplasmosis, it may be worth discussing with your veterinarian if you want to test for anaplas as well as Tularia too.
From anaplasmosis to ERP, Chandler Gould, CEO, National Association of Wheat Growers.
It's a couple things. I mean, one, the secretary did kind of address our wheat growers board last year and told us up front that the money available in this second round of ERP was going to be significantly less. And so we already knew that was coming, but there has been a lot of concern and issue with the implementation. We thought they were going to use the exact same formula that they did in the first round, which really benefited the growers who truly needed the assistance the most. But this new formula that they're using in the second round has really cut too deep and too hard and is not being spread across the areas that really had the disaster. And so NOG, along with 20-something other organizations, wrote a letter to the secretary, and I know that at least 60 members between the House and the Senate have also directly complained to the Secretary of Agriculture implementation of ERP, what I would call 2.0. And so we continue to push for a reevaluation of how that program is implemented to make sure that those monies are spread out where they need to be and in the amount they should have been.
Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
The Ag Economy Barometer Index fell 1 point compared to a month earlier and was 12 points weaker than it was this time last year.
Recapping the Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer is the director of the Center for Commercial Ag, Dr. Jim Mintert.
The current condition index was down 1 point compared to last month and down 23 points compared to December of 2022, while the future expectations index was down 1 point compared to November and 7 points lower than it was a year ago. The Farm Financial Performance Index improved by 2 points this month compared to a month ago and is now up 11 points since September. Once again this month, we asked producers what their biggest concerns are for the upcoming year, and high input costs remain a top concern among producers, but lower crop and livestock prices was now the second biggest concern expressed by producers this month. The Farm Capital Investment Index was up 1 point compared to a month earlier and now is up 8 points compared to October. The short-term farmland value expectation index was down 4 points compared to a month earlier, primarily because more producers said they look for values to weaken in the upcoming year. In this month's survey, we asked producers what their expectations are for consumer inflation in the upcoming year. And 70% of the producers in the survey said they think inflation will be less than 4% in the upcoming year, and just 13% said they expect inflation to exceed 6%. That compares to a year ago when roughly half of the producers in the survey said they thought inflation would exceed 6%. This month's survey also included a question where we asked producers what their expectations are for prime interest rates in the upcoming year. Roughly one-third of the producers in the survey said they expect to see interest rates decline over the upcoming 12 months, And just over half of producers said that they feel like interest rates will either remain unchanged or decline in the upcoming year.
We turn from farmer sentiment to lower pork tariff rates. John Harith reports.
The Philippines has extended a reduction on pork import tariffs through the end of 2024. U.S. Meat Export Federation President and CEO Dan Hallstrom has the details.
The reduced pork tariffs for inbound cargo from the U.S. has been in place since mid-2021. These were originally implemented to stabilize the pork supplies as the Philippines was recovering from African swine fever. And these rate cuts were due to expire at the end of this month, but have now been extended. And just for some reference, the in-quota duty rate normally is at 30%, and with the reduced rates, they'll be 15%. And the out-of-duty quota rate, normally 40%, will be reduced to 25%. So while this is good news, still, even at these lower rates, it's still a relatively high duty.
Affordability of pork for Philippine consumers benefits both importers and domestic producers.
I think the key here is to make pork protein raw material more available to the average consumer, you know, in sense of improving food security and bolstering the consumption. And that's the ultimate goal in many of these markets, is to create a situation where per capita consumption increases over time, which then benefits not only imports, but the domestic pork industry as well in the Philippines. South Korea and Colombia are good examples of countries that start out with very high duties for inbound pork. Now, you know, they're much lower or duty-free, and we're seeing a situation there where industry is expanding. Per capita consumption has grown over time, and that has benefited domestic pork in both South Korea and Colombia. At the same time, imports have been booming. So that's the ideal situation. If you can grow the pie in whole, it benefits all parties.
I'm John Harith.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
That's just icing on the cake if the member actually has first-hand knowledge.
Chandler Gould, CEO, National Association of Wheat Growers. There are two wheat farmers in Congress, Dan Newhouse and Frank Lucas.
I think those are the only two currently sitting in the House that I'm aware of that actually continue to grow wheat. And both Chairman Lucas and Chairman Newhouse have been champions for NOG and the wheat growers across the U.S. year after year. But the fact that you've got 60 members of Congress saying that there's issues, and it's not just within wheat, corn, and soy, and all the other commodities that were involved in ERP, definitely should get the USDA's attention since they are held accountable to the Congress.
So what are the priorities for wheat growers moving into this next farm bill debate?
I actually had the opportunity to meet with Ranking Member Bozeman from the Senate Ag Committee today. And yes, the chances of us having a 23 farm bill are gone. There's only about 8 legislative days left in this year, and we've already got a 1-year extension that has moved the farm bill expiration to September 30th of 2024. I think the most important thing is for us to push to have a farm bill done as soon as we can in the next year. I would prefer it to be in the first quarter. I'm worried about us losing additional funding to write a farm bill if the bill is moved later into next year. Senator Bozeman was very clear that it is a top priority for him to get a farm bill done as soon as possible. I also know it's a top priority for both the chair and the ranking members of the Senate and Health Agriculture Committee. And so we need to continue to talk about that need to get the farm bill done and to bring additional resources in so that we can make sure the risk management tools and the safety net are actually true risk management tools and a safety net reflective of today's current cost of production.
And late last year, the Government Accountability Office released a report on crop insurance.
The GAO report falls short on some of its reasoning. Basically, they wanted to apply means testing in order to qualify for different crop insurance programs. But what the GAO report didn't explain is how much it actually costs the farm. So just because you may have a farmer that's got, you know, $1 million, $5 million, $8 million into their operation, does not mean they're bringing millions of dollars home. I mean, that by the time you do seed and fertilizer and run your tractors and pay staff that you have, there is an extremely high investment into getting a crop in. There's a very high investment of getting a crop out. And you just hope somewhere in the middle there is a margin that lets you put a little bit of money in your bank account so that you can feed your family and pay your mortgage. And so This is an issue that comes from the far left and from the far right. But you see that the like the American Enterprise Institute and many of these extremely conservative think tanks are really who weighed in and who have been promoting this particular GAO report. It's unfortunate that the GAO came out and supported the means testing, but this is not the first time that we've had to defend the importance of risk management tools for all farmers and all wheat growers, regardless of their size. And here's what it comes down to. Every farmer or every farm pays a premium. I mean, crop insurance isn't free. I mean, they have their own skin in the game. But if you start disqualifying growers because of the size of their farm or the equity value that is going into the crop itself, then you're going to make crop insurance actuarially unsound if you start disqualifying people. And when you start disqualifying larger farmers, then you're going to bankrupt the program so that small and medium farmers will not be able to participate in it because they'll have to raise premiums so high that they can't afford it. So having large farmers in the program actually benefits the small and medium farmer to help kick premiums within reach of their operation.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
There are some alternatives, especially for container traffic, to some limitations through the Isthmus of Panama because there is an intermodal system already in operation.
Delays at the Panama Canal continue based upon the ongoing drought. Dr. Ricardo Vasquez is administrator of the Panama Canal.
But as far as the Panama Canal is concerned, our interest will be to provide as much information so you can do the best scheduling possible. You can maximize the amount of cargo that you can put through the Panama Canal and give it to the final destination. We have taken interest in the seasonality of products and the direction of cargoes and also the volumes and destinations where these cargoes are handled to. The idea is to have very joint cooperation, and every advisory has been a reaction to what the shipping lines require in order to better service under these extreme circumstances. One point that is very important to all, the Panama Canal is a public service, and being a public service, we have to provide uniform service to our of our customers. We have been in the past probably biased towards container cargo because we designed the Panama Canal expansion for container shipping. But that capacity is also shared with other cargoes. So we have to balance out, and the Panama Canal cannot take a position to dictate which one goes first, which one goes second. There have been rules, in force for decades that we are trying to adjust, reacting to requests from the industry to make sure that everyone has an opportunity to transit the Panama Canal. We cannot be in any way a determinant of preference or provide any advantage to any particular cargo or any particular shipper. By doing that, it will subject the Panama Canal to potential liabilities that is not the purpose of a public service. And this has to be very well understood by the industry. That's why we listen, that's why we share information, and that's why we try to remain neutral in providing services to all who call for it.
So containers can be offloaded on one coast, railed across the country to the other coast, and then loaded on a new ship. Ilya Espina de Morado is deputy administrator of the canal.
Every day we monitor everything. We monitor the water usage, the queue, the water quality. So we don't discard that something could be modified after February, depending on how we can progress. Like we had some rains yesterday. That was good. That's a plus. So like I said, this is a changing situation. Definitely when October, when we forecasted 18 transits in February, we have been able to change that to 24. But that doesn't discard that we could go down to 20 or 22 or maybe 18 in March or April. Hopefully by May, we will start a full rainy season and things can start picking up. But we will definitely notify the industry at least with 30 days prior to implement any changes, whether if it's to improve or to be a little bit more restrictive. So be assured that we will always communicate with you. We will always issue our advisories. We also have customer meetings locally, where the shipping agents can talk to us. We have it every 3 months. We just had one recently, and if we need to have a special one, we will call for a special one if there's any changes. Right now, we are forecasting 24 in February, but yes, it could change.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
So for the last few years, we've heard a lot about debt forgiveness for different types of producers, but especially for our historically underserved producers. This came out of several different pieces of legislation, and it's caused a lot of confusion.
Oklahoma State's Amy Hagerman.
In the Inflation Reduction Act, we actually got a new set of guidelines for that. It actually broke it into two kinds of financial assistance. The first is for producers who are financially stressed in their operations, and that's still going directly through the Farm Service Agency. The second set of assistance is for producers who have been discriminated against by USDA in the lending process. This is now going through a third-party management system to put that application together. And as we've gotten more information on this, we've learned more about how to do the application or what kinds of documentation is necessary, those pieces of information.